dirty moderates, debt, and the debt ceiling. That is today's episode. I thought I would at least begin by kind of giving you a little primer about the debt ceiling, a little cheat sheet. All right. So let's do it. Here we are again, folks, at a crisis in American politics. Shocker, right? A bipartisan one, it should be noted. So Congress controls how much money the United States can borrow. Okay. Congress authorizes spending bills. All bills relating to money start in Congress. That's the Constitution. Now let's look at what that exactly means. We're heading for a huge fight. Just so you know, to start this off, Janet Yellen said, originally she had said it would be July 1st, but now apparently by June 1st, we are going to run out of cash for our bills. And this debt ceiling thing's been going on now for a long, long time, even going back to 1995. But the Republicans are demanding an increase in the borrowing limit is accompanied by other savings, spending cuts. President Biden and the Democrats say they want a clean debt ceiling increase, by the way, like the Republicans gave Trump. He said he would negotiate spending bills separately. Biden, we learned, I think yesterday, is going to meet with the Republican and Democrat leaders on May 9th, just so you know. But here's what you need to know about the debt limit, okay, and where we are. The debt limit is, for those that don't know, it's a cap on the total amount of money that we can borrow as a country to meet our financial obligations. That's quite simply what it is. Okay. Now, because we run budget deficits, meaning we spend more than we bring in through our revenue and our taxes, it means we have to consistently borrow huge, huge amounts of money to pay our bills. And that tab, that credit card, our government credit card, the big ticket items, are the social safety net programs, Medicare, Social Security, interest on the debt, because we're borrowing so much, and the salaries for our veterans and our military folk, currently and formerly. Now, we've heard about this all the time. Approaching the debt ceiling is always given over to a lot of caterwauling about government spending and why we spend, and I think there is validity to that. But lifting the debt ceiling, and this is very, 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 very important. Please highlight it. And I know it is said, it's not said enough. Lifting it does not authorize any new spending. Lifting the debt ceiling does not authorize new spending. You guys know, dirty moderate, I don't like the government being this big, and I don't like how much we spend. And I do believe in some of the spending cuts that are being bandied about. Okay. But this is not into that. All the debt ceiling increase does, again, Republicans gave it to Trump 3 times. It simply allows the United States to spend money on programs that have already been authorized to be spent on by Congress. Now, we hit our debt limit actually in January, which is when the Treasury Department has to go into these kind of dance, these kind of extraordinary maneuvers to continue to meet our obligations, right? Not default. And so those measures will kind of curb certain government investments so bills can be paid. They can do some little bit tap dancing. Okay. Now, the debt currently is $31.5 trillion. It crossed that for the first time last year. The borrowing cap, okay, is 31 point. I'm sorry, the national debt crossed $31 trillion last time. This time last year, excuse me, but the borrowing cap is at $31.381 trillion. Okay. So you see where we are. We're really, really, really close. Why do we have a debt limit? Why are we at this $31 trillion number? Okay. So Constitution says Congress, as I said at the outset, has to authorize government borrowing. Now, in the early 20th century, is when this idea of a debt limit increase started. And the reason it was put in is because, it was a way for the Treasury, which is the executive branch, not to have to go to Congress in order to issue debt to pay its bills like they're doing now, right? They're issuing debt, more and more debt that investors can buy, and foreigners, the Japanese and Chinese mainly, are buying up this debt, okay? That's why we're paying so much interest on it, and we keep spending. Okay, during World War I, a little history, Congress passed something called the Second Liberty Bond Act, which allowed the Treasury this flexibility. Okay, this was 1917. America had just entered World War I, and the debt limit sort of debate officially then kind of began, but really took shape in 1939 in the Roosevelt years during the New Deal, where the government was really expanding to help a nation in major crisis, 25% unemployment, and, you know, a great expansion of all sorts of work programs. You know them all, the WPA, the AAA, and all these things that lifted people out of poverty. And at that time, the debt limit was set to $45 billion. Okay, that's in 1939. All right. Now, as I said, it's $31.3 trillion. Just kidding. Okay. Now, it was created so government could move a little more smoothly. You know, the executive branch started having more power in the 20th century than it did in the 19th, certainly in the late 18th. That's how young we are, right? That the presidency and the executive branch wanted more flexibility to kind of not have to worry and consistently ask Congress, we need money, we need money. And yeah, I think a lot of people think the debt limit sucks. It's more trouble than it's worth. If the government exhausts all of our possibilities here and runs out of cash, it then is unable to issue new debt. That means Treasury Department can't offer government-backed securities anymore. People won't be able to buy this debt. It means there won't be enough money to pay our bills. That includes, again, interest and other payments it owes, not only the military and our social programs, but to our bondholders. And of course, many of our veterans and many of our retirees. No one knows what would happen if we get to that point. But if we're unable to make payments, required payments to our bondholders, most economists of any stature and any credence, and most Wall Street analysts say that this would be a global financial crisis. That's what would ensue. Okay? Now, other ideas get floated around. We're not going to raise the debt ceiling, but we're going to make sure that Social Security benefits are paid, military salaries are paid, et cetera, et cetera. One idea that's been proposed is that the Treasury Department would prioritize certain payments to avoid defaulting on the debt. So, for example, the Treasury might pay the bondholders first who own our Treasury debt, even if it means, you know, delaying other needs and obligations like government salaries or retirement benefits. But right now, that's not on the table. That's just been floated. I don't think Janet Yellen's going to go for it. But the crazy thing here, folks, okay, is why we are where we are. Because, you know, why? Why? Well, let's go back. Cold War ends. All right, Berlin Wall in 89, Soviet Union 1991, and the United States has something called a peace dividend. A peace dividend, what's that? Well, we had put so much money so long into fighting the Cold War, right, into military bases and military operations and funding the Pentagon, which just ballooned in, again, a very necessary cold, not hot war, standoff with the Soviet Union in the global battle against communism in the 20th century, okay, from about 1948 to 1991, so give or take 40 years of that, or 50 years, excuse me, 45 years. So we then no longer needed to spend the same amount on the military. We closed military bases. We actually pulled back on our Pentagon spending in the Bill Clinton years, and we enjoyed that peace dividend. The economy boomed, and a lot of the money was able to be invested in new ideas and new programs. Also, we had something called the dot-com boom, for those that remember. And the dot-com boom was an era where everything was dot-com. Okay, the internet was very young in terms of mass usage, right? The World Wide Web, as it was called. Pets.com and tissues.com and sanitizer.com and books.com, all these, everybody just started a dot-com. And there were tons of public offerings and investors were pouring money into this. And of course, like every house that's built poorly, in other words, that has no structure to it, it falls. It is destroyed. Boom, kaboom, we should say, went the dot-com bubble. And that was in the year 2000, the end of Bill Clinton's presidency. Okay, and that ushered in some trouble. But the big trouble was yet to come. 2001, September 11th, the world changed. Okay, the entire world yet again becomes and the United States leading the way in an international crisis, an international inflection point with now the global war on terror. And George W. Bush, who had been elected in 2000, it decides to go into war against Afghanistan and later Iraq. As you all remember, we went to Afghanistan in October of 2001. We went into Iraq March of 2003. So here we are. Now, in 2001, he also passed big tax cuts. Yep. But he didn't cut spending. He just cut taxes, which meant more money would be spent. More money would be spent. Not, you know, we're not bringing in what we spend. It's just the way it goes. So the tax cuts, two major wars, we put them on the credit card. That ballooned, okay, our national debt. I mean, it was insane what we did, but we did, right? So the peace dividend was gone. This whole era of peace and prosperity where we could scale back, maybe even balance the budget, which Bill Clinton did with the Republican Congress, balance the federal budget, that is the budget deficits. He did that for the first time since 1969. He did that in the late 90s. No other president's done that since then. Two wars, unpaid tax cuts. Do you know that the estimated cost of the two wars, if you factor in also caring for veterans and the entire amount of infrastructure money we spent, by most estimates, it's about $6 trillion. Just for comparison, that's about what Joe Biden has spent in the last 2.5-3 years, just on all his programs, COVID relief, infrastructure bill, CHIPS Act. Yeah, that's what that war cost us. Now, the debt ceiling crisis emerged in 2011. You may remember with Barack Obama, the Republicans want to do exactly the same thing, but he gave something away that has cost us dearly. He made 80% of those tax cuts, those Bush tax cuts, permanent. 4/5, okay? So Republicans said we got to have, they're in the budget. There are permanent tax cuts we've been living with since 2011 that we don't pay for. Just for a point of reference. Obama didn't want to default. It's what he did. We went through this after in the second Obama term. They relented, okay? But all of this goes on where neither Bush nor Obama really ended, as you know, that military conflict. Iraq's required a presence. Only recently, and we always still have to give money when we leave places. The United States has bases everywhere. We're still in Germany and Japan, and World War II ended in 1945, but we're there. You know, we are there as guardians and protectors and for other reasons. But we are at a point where Biden took us out of Afghanistan, okay? But we've had crises, big crises going on in between all of everything I just told you, right? So the dot-com boom, a Cold War ends, dot-com boom, Clinton prosperity, 9/11, Bush tax cuts, two big wars. Okay. The other big thing that happened besides 9/11 was the 2008 financial crisis. Obama had to pour about $800 billion into the economy shortly after getting reelected. Most economists actually didn't think it was enough, but it did stave off a Great Depression. He had to rescue the Detroit automakers. They did pay it back, but he had to do that. We began funding Tesla and electric cars back then with all the green energy stuff that the GOP used to laugh at. So again, spending, spending, spending. And remember, some of those tax cuts are still permanent. Obama didn't get us out of those military expeditions. Trump then gets in. He spends like a drunken sailor, as the Republicans always do, and try to pretend they're fiscally prudent when they are really, in many ways, just profligate guys. They just don't care because they spend on what they want to spend. And they love to talk about spending cuts, often at the expense of the most vulnerable. But they don't pay for their tax cuts. See, if you're a fiscal conservative, and I consider myself, I guess, a fiscal conservative, I think tax cuts do spur the economy. They just don't spur the economy in the Reagan-esque trickle down, everyone's going to get rich. Pay for the tax cuts, offer tax cuts across the board, not just to the wealthy, and then make big, big corporations pay their fair share. And I think a lot of Americans would prefer that. They'd like to keep some of their own money. But every time we do it, we act like we don't have to pay for it. We want to do a war on terror. We want to do these tax cuts. We don't want to pay for them. Then, of course, COVID comes. Trump and Biden both, I think, collectively have poured about $7 or $8 trillion in. The numbers vary, and they're always changing, and there's still unspent funds, so I don't have the exact number, but roughly. Okay, so more deficits require more debt. Okay, right? And yeah, and that's where we are now. So all that, okay, puts us at $31 trillion. As I said, the end of World War II, or during World War II, the debt limit was $45 billion. Okay. So that's where we are. And the Republicans, of course, are playing cheap politics with this, but both parties have contributed to this explosive debt situation for the past 43 years, beginning really with Ronald Reagan. The era of mass budget deficits really began in earnest. But actually, the amount spent by both parties, it's like, yeah, the Republicans only beat the Dems by a little. The Republicans have, I think, collectively spent $13 trillion or so, and the Democrats have spent $12.5 trillion. Okay, everybody's guilty. Now, the Republicans keep playing with fire. They, going back to 1995, they did this. There was a big government shutdown, and Bill Clinton stood firm, and the Republicans paid for it in the next election. That was over that. 2011, we did it. Okay, we did it in 2013. We just kept doing it and doing it and doing it. And the Republicans want to crash the economy now because it will make Biden look bad. We have a sort of very shaky economy despite good numbers. People are feeling the pain. The Fed actually hiked interest rates another quarter of a point again today. That's painful. Inflation is down, but it's not down enough. Everybody I know still feels everything they do is expensive. Just living has changed. And, you know, global financial crisis in 08, global pandemic in 2020, money had to be spent. And by the way, not all debts created equal. You know, as much as I don't like that we're in this debt because it's just unsustainable at some point, and our Social Security and Medicare are going to run out of money because nobody ever wants to cut them, and we just keep kicking the can down the road. But not all debts create equal. I mean, interventions on behalf of COVID for people with rent relief and food and all that stuff, that was a necessary thing. And as a legislator, I would have voted for the Trump relief, and I would have voted for the Biden relief. I don't like the size of those spending bills. And of course, in some ways, they did contribute to our inflationary moment. But what choice did we have? We would have been much worse without the spending. Could have gone into a deeper, deeper depression. So sometimes you got to spend, right? It's the old spend money to make money argument. So the debt limit is a weapon. It's a real weapon. And the Republicans love to use it. And again, they want the increase. The clean increase that is always given that they did for Trump to be tied to some pretty big spending cuts that are never going to happen. Bill passed the House. McCarthy passed a bill. It's DOA in the Senate. Of course, even if it got through the Senate, which it won't, President Biden would veto it. So that's the impasse. That's the standoff. And again, Janet Yellen says by the first, going to run out of money. As I said, the Treasury Department can try to do certain things to avoid default. I mean, we haven't done that. I can't tell if this is going to happen or not. The pessimist in me of our current state of American affairs says, yeah, it'll wreak havoc because these guys' thirst for power is so above their love of country, as you know. It's only about power. Democracy doesn't matter. That's the raison d'etre for this podcast. We are fighting for democracy, saving it one episode at a time, as are many of our colleagues, because we have the Democratic Party, dysfunctional though they may be, often trying to do the right thing, certainly not always, and the authoritarian party. And they'd be happy to destroy our financial situation if it meant hurting Joe Biden and the Democrats and seeing Orange Von Fuckface reelected and then, you know, winning back control of the Senate and things like that. But that's the standoff. That's where we are. $31 trillion is the number. Both parties are responsible, but both parties, just to be clear, are not responsible for this chaos. Both parties have created it. One party, the Republican Party, is happy to indulge it and to play with fire. And like everything else in America right now, we are always dangerously close to getting burned. Folks, thank you for listening and indulging me always. I know there is always something to say, and all of our exciting new stuff coming your way, I think it's going to make you very, very happy. Also, make sure you subscribe if you're not to this podcast anywhere and everywhere you get your podcasts. And have you seen us on TikTok? Oh yeah. We're doing some fun things on TikTok too. We join the kids. Why not? Hey, democracy's for them after all. All right, folks, thanks for joining. In the meantime, stay dirty, stay moderate, and stay safe.